Hey, super fans! This is Dana Delaney, Lois Lane from the DC Animated Universe, and you are listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life!
Hey there, comic book, superhero, and pop culture fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. So glad you could all join me today here in the lair. I'm about ready to have a chat with one of my all-time favorite actresses. I know she's a fave of yours as well. The lovely and talented Dana Delaney is just minutes away from joining us. Man, we're going to have some fun today. We are, of course, going to be talking about Lois Lane, the iconic character she's voiced for some time now in the DC Animated Universe. We're going to chat about many of Dana's acting roles over the years and her first voiceover acting experience as Andrea Beaumont in the animated feature film Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Great flick. It's finally going to be out on Blu-ray July 25th from Warner Brothers. Man, you think, what took it so long? It's here now. It's coming. We're going to have it on Blu-ray. It's going to look fantastic. Lots to chat about with Dana today. Looking forward to it. I will say this, if you have not seen Mask of the Phantasm yet, you're looking forward to seeing it for the first time on Blu-ray. Sorry, we're going to be spoiling a major plot point on the show today. Look, it's been out for a while, right? So fair warning. Look, you know, it's been out for 24 years, right? It's like it just came out last week, so we are going to spoil a plot point. Not the first time. Kenner Toys ruined the surprise back in the day when they put the action figure line out. So I'm not the first one to spoil it. If you saw the action figure, you know what the plot point is. So there you go. Look, before we get to that conversation, though, quick reminder. I mentioned this on last week's show. I'm going to mention it here again today. I've got a preview of what's headed your way next week on Comic Book Central. Man, we definitely had movie sign here in Columbus, Ohio this past week. This was a fun week. If you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and I definitely am, it was a fun week. First, Mystery Science Theater 3000 live played here. And then the very next night and the night after, back-to-back nights, the Mads Are Back tour made a stop here in the capital of the Buckeye State as well. A lot of movie riffing going on last week for fans of MST3K, and I'm definitely one of them. It was an amazing week watching our favorites from the original show and the current Netflix series, making fun of bad movies. That was fun. We got to watch it live. Man, we're part of it. I got a chance to chat with Joel Hodgson from MST3K Live. He's been here on the show before. Met up with him at Monster Bash a few years ago in Pittsburgh. I also chatted with Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff from the Mads Are Back tour. You'll hear those interviews on next week's episode of Comic Book Central. But if you want to find out if those tours are going to be coming to a city near you, and if they are, get your tickets and go. Great shows. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about the specifics next week. But here's where you go to find out more information. MST3K.com and themadsareback.com. That's where you're going to find tour information, ticket information, all that good stuff. I'm going to put those links in the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net, so you can find those there as well. Again, Joel, Trace, Frank, all going to be here next week on Comic Book Central. You do not want to miss it. And if you've already subscribed to Comic Book Central on iTunes, man, you're not going to miss it. That episode, each and every episode, they're available to you there. You don't miss a moment of the fun. Subscribe, leave a review of the show on iTunes. Much appreciated to those who have done that. The link to subscribe to Comic Book Central on iTunes, it's on the website, comicbookcentral.net, as are links to Comic Book Central on Facebook and Twitter. So be sure to follow Comic Book Central on social media. Share the lair each and every week on social media. Appreciate all those out there who are doing that. Share those Facebook posts, retweet the show on Twitter. If you know MST3K fans, man, they're going to love this episode that's coming your way. Blueberry Stitcher, you can find the show there as well. MST3K, the Mads Are Back. Be sure to check them out live and be sure to check them out right here on Comic Book Central next week. All right, kids, on to today's show. Man, we've got another good one ready for you. We're going to be getting the scoop on a lot of cool things directly from Lois Lane herself. Check this out. A little bit of background on my special guest, and then I will welcome in the incredibly talented actress, Dana Delaney. Dana was born in New York City, raised in Connecticut, and took an interest in acting at an early age thanks to classic films and Broadway shows. She eventually appeared on Broadway herself, as well as daytime dramas and roles in feature films and television movies. In 1985, a standout guest appearance in the wildly popular ABC detective show Moonlighting brought on some major attention. From femme fatale on Moonlighting to fiancé on Magnum P.I., Dana proved she could hold her own with anyone on screen. And in the ABC series China Beach, she got a TV series lead. As Army nurse Colleen McMurphy, Dana was nominated for an Emmy each of the four seasons of the show, winning the award twice. Having performed on stage, on television, and in feature films, she then thought she'd try her hand at something new. Well, actually, it was more like she thought she'd try her voice at something new. Animation. In the animated film Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, which is loosely based on the Batman Year 2 comic book storyline, Dana plays Andrea Beaumont, a former girlfriend of Bruce Wayne, a woman who, like Bruce, is hiding a dark secret. Now, Dana's voiceover work was so impressive that when it came time for Superman to get his own animated series, producers knew they had their Lois Lane to match wits and bylines with Tim Daly's Clark Kent Superman.
I'm confused, Kent. See, I've lived in Metropolis most of my life, and I can't figure out how some yokel from Smallville is suddenly getting every hot story in town.
Well, Lois, the truth is, I'm actually Superman in disguise, and I only pretend to be a journalist in order to hear about disasters as they happen and then squeeze you out of the byline.
You're a sick man, Kent.
You asked.
Well, since Superman the Animated Series, Dana has continued to voice Lois in a variety of DC projects. She's appeared in numerous feature films and returned to network television in the hugely successful series Desperate Housewives and Body of Proof. Now joining me now is the talented actress who won multiple Emmy Awards for her role as Colleen McMurphy on China Beach. She is a star of stage and screen. And for us comic book fans, she is intrepid reporter Lois Lane in the DC Animated Universe. A big welcome to Dana Delaney. Dana, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you, Joe.
Hey, before we talk about animated heroes and villains, and we are going to be talking about animated heroes and villains, I want to mention you've got a new comedy. We're right around the corner, right? It's coming out in theaters September 29th?
Yes, it's called Literally Right Before Aaron, which is not easy to say. And it's written and directed by Ryan Eggold, who stars on The Blacklist. And I weirdly got the job because Ryan and me and Leah Thompson were on Hollywood Game Night together. And we were a team. And we played so well, even though we lost. We should have won. It was a technicality. I think he wanted to keep the band together, so both Leah and I are in the movie.
Okay, so let's not bury the headline here. Some controversy on game night, then? Has this been contested? Is there a replay involved, or what's going on here?
All I can tell you is there was someone on who was so bombed on the other team, a certain Cheryl from Dancing with the Stars, that... I think they won just because they were sloppy in the end.
Okay, has this one aired yet?
Are we? Yes, it did air.
Okay. Well, maybe we can catch it online too. So, I was going to say some casted. I mean, you got Kobe Smulders, Justin Long. You mentioned Leah Thompson,
mm-hmm.
John Cho, Christian Schaal, Peter Gallagher. I mean, this cast is amazing. Pretty good flick.
I like it because it's. It is a romantic comedy, but it's more of a darkly focused one, which I kind of like, you know.
It's kind of like a weird edge to it.
Yeah, it's where the romance doesn't work out the way you wanted it to, which is kind of my life, so I like that.
Okay. I was going to say, you do a lot of drama. I mean, you've done comedy, you've done everything, but I mean, do you lean toward one or the other? Or like, would you like to do more comedies or just like do a lot of more silly things?
I like to do it all. It depends upon the writing. I do tend to see the darker side, or the more real side of things. So I can kind of kill any comedy given the chance. I mean, not always, but you know, I think that's why I tend to do more drama.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we're talking about acting then. What was your earliest memory of being interested in acting? Because your interest goes back to when you were a little kid, right?
Oh, yeah. I started acting professionally once I got out of college, but it was something I always knew I wanted to do. I just love it. It's kind of a calling for me. I still have not gotten bored with it yet. I don't love the business, but I still love what I do, and I still get excited about it. So yeah, I feel very lucky that I get paid to do it.
Your family took you to Broadway shows when you were a kid?
Yes. I grew up in Connecticut, which, was 45 minutes outside of New York. So I was very lucky that I probably saw my first Broadway show when I was 7 or something like that.
Okay.
So it kind of gave me the bug.
What was it? Was it just how elaborate everything was, or was it that audience feedback that was coming in? Like, what was it that appealed to you, or was it just somebody getting the attention on stage? Like, how did it manifest itself, or was it all of those things?
I think it was just the fun of it. It was the play that you get to go up there and perform. And it's funny. I've never been one of those actors that did it for the audience. I think it took me a long time to get over the fear of the audience, actually. Now I enjoy it, but
On stage, you mean that fear on stage?
Yeah, I think I do it more because I like the play aspect of it, that you're pretending, you know? I like the pretending part.
Were you ever able to channel that fear as adrenaline maybe into a performance that you found? I mean, is that how you
exactly
sort of work?
Okay. No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I kind of learned that in my 20s that, you know, fear is the same thing as excitement. You just got to sort of, you know, place it that way in your brain, and then it gets more fun.
You like film noir things, right?
I mean, I do, that was, yeah.
Okay. Because I saw you on, is it Turner Classic Movies?
Yeah.
Doing the Myrna Loy. Are you a Myrna Loy fan, or did that just sort of work out that way, or how did that?
I was always a Myrna Loy fan from the Thin Man movies,
right.
But then once they gave me that job, which I absolutely loved, I really delved into her life, and now I'm a super Myrna Loy fan.
Yeah, she's something.
She really was, and she was just an interesting lady. I urged everybody to read her autobiography, which is called, I have it right in front of me, it's called Being and Becoming. And she wrote it, it's pretty much in her own voice, and she was very political after World War II and was always sort of a citizen of the world and really kind of a real modern woman.
Yeah, I loved her in the Thin Man movies, but I mean, she made so many other movies with Powell. It was just, I mean, just completely different takes on their relationship in those other movies too, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I read, and you also mentioned, was it In a Lonely Place? That's one of your favorite flicks.
It is my favorite movie. Yes,
okay.
I was again. I had a great teacher in high school who showed me that movie, and it just blew me away. And it's still, since high school, has remained my favorite film.
There's where some of the dark drama comes in then too. Well, exactly. The film noir is going to play itself out
I tend to like the unhappy ending.
Well, I mean, I think there's so many things in Hollywood that, or at least back in the day, that were established of, you know, we know where this is going. Sometimes it's nice to not know where something's going.
Yeah, and I just think it mirrors life a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. So then, how do you get to stage performances in New York and then eventually into Los Angeles?
Yeah. I did an off-Broadway play in New York called Blood Moon that Nick Kazan wrote, who, you know, back then he was known as Ilya Kazan's son, and now he's known as Zoe Kazan's father. But he did win an Oscar in his own right. But I did that in my 20s, and it was going to be done in L.A., and he asked me to come out and do it in L.A., and then I got work from doing that play, so I ended up staying.
Okay. And so then you got into soaps and commercials out in L.A.?
No, I did the soaps in New York.
Those were all in New York.
Those were all in New York. Once I hit L.A., it was just movies and television.
There was one thing I saw that's one of the coolest things, and it's I remember when Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, was on the ABC Sunday Night Movie, February 24th, 1985. I taped it back in the day on VHS. I had it. I remember years and years and years ago watching this, and I kept it with the commercial breaks in. And all popping up in the middle of this thing. And like at the time, you know, this is years removed from it, and I'm like, that's Dana Delaney. There's like a whisk commercial.
Yes. That was my last commercial I ever
was.
Did.
That the last one ever? Okay, because I still have it. It's on VHS. I own it. It's because I remember popping up. I'm like, that's Dana Delaney in a whisk commercial.
It was kind of iconic because the guy who was in that, Tom, who was a wonderful guy, He was one of the, he was gay and he ended up dying of AIDS, one of the early people. And it, they asked me if they could use that clip in a documentary on his life called Life and Death on the A-List.
Oh, they used the Wisk commercial.
They used the Wisk commercial. And
yeah, he plays your neighbor in it and you're kind of like busting, you're busting his chops because he's got ring around the
Yes, yes. And oh my God, I could tell you stories about making that commercial that were hilarious.
Tell me a story. It's why we're here.
Oh my God! Well, you got to remember, it was the '80s.
As long as they're family friend, if they're family friendly, yeah. you got to clean it up somehow.
I don't think they are.
Okay, you got to use some whisk on them to clean them up.
Well, that would be involved, yes. But yeah, one day in my autobiography, I will be writing about filming that commercial.
So it must not have been too long after that that you got Moonlighting, right? Your episode of Moonlighting.
Well, yeah. I mean, once I did the commercial, and then I got Moonlighting, and I got to say that Moonlighting episode did a lot for me, considering it was just one episode. Mm-hmm. I got hired as Magnum PI's fiance off of that. I did a sitcom off of that. I got asked out on a lot of dates off of that. It was great, and that's when I stopped doing commercials. I didn't have to anymore.
Yeah, and it's and you knew Bruce Willis from his bartending days, right?
Yes, used to both hang out at Cafe Central, and he was a bartender there.
So you just went in for a regular audition then, and it's...
Yeah, I just went in for the audition. Maybe it helped that Bruce knew me, I don't know.
He wasn't there in the audition, was he?
No, he was not there. He was already doing the show, but because I taped in New York. But I do remember saying to Glenn Gordon Caron... that I see this character as Gloria Graham, who was in A Lonely Place. So that was sort of my that was my image as I was doing that part.
I was wondering if that was connection, because I knew you had mentioned her as an actress. I knew you mentioned that movie. And there's a very much, I mean, as silly as the show was, and it is, there's definitely a film noir sort of aspect to this thing. And, you know, like you're the girl, well, spoiler alert, but the girlfriend turned out to be the killer too.
Yeah.
The bad girl.
Yeah, and it had the shoulder pads that worked in all eras.
You're 80s. That's right. Yes. They came back. That's right. After all this. And, you know, what an episode. It's not often you see a car chase with a funeral procession. So very cool. Yeah, and you mentioned Magnum P.I. out of that. I'm a huge Magnum P.I. fan. I remember that, again, another standout episode, because I'm watching this. I remember back in the day, and it was like, okay, this is going in a different direction. Because I think at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, they had talked about that was going to be the final season of Magnum.
Yeah, that's why they were going to have a fiancé. The ending was going to be that, you know, Magnum, the perennial bachelor, finally gets married.
Okay.
And so they cast me in that in this two-part episode. And then, because it was 7 years the show had been on the air, and then Tom decided to re-up, so he couldn't get married. So that was the end of that. So then we broke up.
Well, it was so strange, too, because then they were like, well, it was going to end, and they were going to kill him. And then the show, like, he got shot, and then he got, you know, and then that was it. So it's like, they apparently didn't know whether they want to marry him off, kill him off, bring him back. I mean,
it's like that game, right? Kill him, marry him, or, you know.
Yeah. Well, he didn't get married, but you got some cool episodes out of that. So that when you came on for that season 7, that premiere, that was the thought, that was that you were going to marry Magnum, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And then I guess... So what happened? Because you end up coming back, I think, like 7 episodes later or something, and there's another episode where you guys flip-flop, because the whole thing shot in L.A.
Yeah.
He's doing a case.
I'm not sure the order of it. I think what happened was once they realized that Tom was going to re-up, they had to resolve my character somehow, so they brought me back for the breakup.
Okay. You know? That was kind of what I was wondering, because it is a very cool episode. Cause, the one where you come back to Hawaii and you guys don't get – it's called Out of Sync, and you literally are out of sync. You can't get together the whole episode, so – All right. Well, that explains a lot for there. So, I mean, what was your experience working with Tom Selleck on Magnum? That had to be like, especially at that height of that show.
It's still one of my favorite things. I mean, you know, I was a young actor. I think I had just turned 30, and you know, it's Tom Selleck. He was gorgeous, and I didn't realize how silly he was. I laughed so hard filming that episode, and he was just so silly. We were, you know, I mean, it got to the point where we were laughing about booger jokes. You know, it was that juvenile.
Tom Selleck was.
Yes. Wow. But it was hilarious.
I expect that from Bruce Willis, maybe, but not Tom Selleck.
No, it was the opposite. Tom was so funny and Bruce was very serious.
Oh, really? So they...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So complete opposite of their characters.
Yeah. Then. Well, I mean, I think that Tom was just having a lot of fun at that point on the set. And when I did Moonlighting, that's when there was a lot of tension on the set. Yeah. So that kind of translated.
Now, you didn't, on Moonlighting, you didn't see any of that though, right? Because, I mean, that's still pretty fairly early, I think, before the
I saw a bit of it.
Did you see? What was the most awkward moment for you on that set of just going, ooh, maybe I should go to craft services or something right now?
Well, I think, you know, there was a moment where I remember that I was doing a close-up and there was a fly, supposedly. Sybil was on the other side of the camera and she was making these faces and very distracted. I couldn't figure out, I was trying to do my work. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I love Sybil. I know Sybil now. But at that point, I was like, I didn't know her. And they cut and I went, what was that? And she said, oh, you didn't see that fly? And I went, no, okay. So it was just weird. And there was a scene, and I've worked a while, I get it. I remember there were scenes where she would not take her sunglasses off because of the sun. And yeah, you know what? You look better with sunglasses on when it's a really bright sun out. But I didn't know that at the time, you know?
Yeah, it comes off as diva or something, but at the time you're like, I can't see. I literally can't see my co-star.
Right, but now I get it. I'll keep my sunglasses on too.
Well, perspective of time. That's there. Yes. There you go. Well, okay, so two very cool roles coming out. And then, so that leads right into China Beach then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yep. Two Emmys, we mentioned two Emmys, four nominations in 4 years. Okay, how do you just keep things balanced? When there's so much success at that early of a stage, because that is just, I mean, you're coming off guest shots on television, all of a sudden you're star of the show and the Emmys are just coming in. That's got to be insane at that point.
Actually, I really was pretty unaware of it all, to tell you the truth, because I was working so much and I was so devoted to the show and I was just loving every second of it. And we were such a tight unit on that show that there was no, you know, bad behavior whatsoever. So I think I had no clue and I was just doing my work and we were working sometimes 24 hours a day.
Wow.
So it wasn't until after the show ended that I kind of got an inkling of it.
Okay, we hear that sometimes because sometimes the actors are so immersed in what they're doing, they have no idea what the perception is outside of that, other than, I guess, ratings coming in or something or...
Yeah, and we
whether you're still drawing a paycheck or not.
But you have to understand, we didn't have huge ratings, and we were only on for really 3.5 seasons.
Did somebody at the network really? I mean, what was it that kept it on? Because obviously the accolades were there.
Yeah, I think you know when you get good reviews, they sort of are forced to keep you on. Mm. I'm not sure that ABC quite understood the show, and Bob Iger was running the network then. And he's a friend of mine still to this day. And, you know, it was his decision to cancel it. And I think he would stand by it in terms of ratings, you know, mm-hmm. It's business sense.
What was the most challenging part of that show for you? Just, I mean, cause you mentioned about the long work days and all that. Cause I mean, that's really just an intense, brutal schedule working on that. And you're in almost every scene, right?
Yeah. Not as much as I was in Body of Proof, just to jump in.
Well, that's true.
It was more of an ensemble. Yeah, but again, I was 30 years old. Well, I think maybe I was 31 at that point. But I felt like I was being well used. I never had a problem with the hours. And, you know, and John Segret Young, who ran it, just inspired you to really do better always, you know.
What did you learn on that set? Because at that point, you're leading the show. So what did you learn from that show that you were able to take into many of your other roles and features and things beyond that?
I'd say the two most important things were, the first one was if you're number one on the call sheet, that you are responsible for that and you have to be a good leader. And it's always about the team, not about you, because that's what makes a good show. So that I learned. Two, I learned how it's all about the writing, you know, it's you're not going to be any good if the writing's not any good. So it's about the writing. And three, I guess the third thing would be the motto on the set was dig deeper. So that was sort of what I carried with me for a long time after that show, was to dig deeper. And like, I it serves you, I have to say now in retrospect, it serves you on some projects, but not on all. Because, like I said, I can kill any comedy if I dig deep enough. I will always try to find the darkest thing possible.
Each project's going to have its own rules, right? There's
exactly.
There's always the exceptions to the rules, too. Yeah. We mentioned so many things. I mean, you've done it all, stage, TV, feature films, and all these different things. One thing I don't think you had done up to the point you of, like, 1993, voice acting. Batman, mm-hmm. Mask of the Phantasm. That was your first voice acting gig?
Yes, it was, yeah.
How did you get into that? I know China Beach was produced by Warner Brothers, so, I mean, you're in the Warner Brothers world, but
right.
How did you find out about it? How did you first hear about it? How did you get into voice acting? Because that's a pretty great gig to get into for your first one.
Well, I never get commercial voiceovers either, so I lucked out. it's not my métier. I really owe it all to Arlene Sorkin, I think. And you know who Arlene Sorkin is, right?
Just interviewed her a few weeks ago. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so glad to hear that. She's
yeah,
I
love talking.
Friends.
Oh, she was so fun. And she did the voice, too, which was awesome.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
glad to
hey,
hear
any, that. Anytime I get called Puddin' by Arlene Sorkin, that to me is a complete day.
Arlene and I met in our 20s, and we still are great friends. And she, I believe, suggested me to Paul Dini, who had written Mask of the Phantasm along with Bruce Timm. And was Alan Burnett on that too, or was it just Paul?
I believe he was on. Sure. Yeah, because they had already about a year in on the animated series.
Yeah.
And I think this was supposed to be originally direct to video. And that's the thing I wanted to ask you about there too. Well, first, before I get to that, so did you? I mean, did you? She suggested you. Did you have to audition for it, or did they just go, "Oh yeah, Dana Delaney, yeah."
Yeah, that was. I mean, that was one of the perks of being, you know.
Emmy award-winning Dana Delaney.
somewhat hot at the time.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was lucky. I had no idea what I was walking into. I did not have to audition. They just offered it to me. And I walked in. And what I loved about it, and I think it was, I mean, you probably know better than I do, but it was when they were beginning to ask actors to be less, you know, cartoony and more real in the voice work. And I think there was a transition going on. And so they wanted real, they just wanted real voices and real acting and nothing heightened at all.
Had they shown you any of the episodes of Batman, the animated series? Were you familiar with it at all, or did you just kind of hit the ground running with it?
No, I really wasn't. And I knew Kevin Conroy from New York, from theater. So I already knew him. And I knew Hart Bochner, who I think plays the bad guy in it. Mm-hmm. But no, I just went in and did it.
It's finally coming out on Blu-ray after all this
year.
I know. It was right around the corner. It's one of those things you think is always on Blu-ray, and you're like, oh, no, they haven't released yet. So it's going to be amazing to see. Look, after nearly a quarter of a century, I think the Statute of Limitations is long past for spoilers, so I think we can say you're the bad guy. You're the bad girl. You're the bad girl in this. You know, you're the villain.
But I'm still not clear because Stacy Keach, did he end up?
He did the voice of Phantasm.
Yeah, so he's. I can't remember because I haven't seen it since then. Well, maybe I will now that it's out on Blu-ray.
I've just seen it recently for after a while too. So it's did you record Phantasm dialogue then?
I think I recorded both. And then did they just end up using Stacy's voice maybe?
Yes. Stacy was the voice of Phantasm.
I was Andrea then.
Yes, you're Andrea Beaumont.
And you know that Andrea was named after Andrea Romano, right?
I was wondering about that because I know, I know they had taken some elements from like the Batman Year 2 comic book storylines. I knew they sort of took some of these things. But then Andrea, I was like, I wonder if that's a coincidence or if they actually just named it after her.
No, it was definitely in honor of Andrea because, you know, a lot of people say Andrea. So it was very important that it be Andrea.
Andrea. So they had to make sure that you knew that, right? Your name is Andrea as you're pronouncing it. I know this was originally supposed to be a direct-to-video release and it ended up, I think they switched it up and they're like, no, we're going to do this as a feature film. We're going to put this in theaters. Did you get a sense of that impacting the production schedule? Because I think that just sort of like smashes everything together, compresses everything together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I have a vague memory of it having to be rushed in time for Christmas. Does that sound right?
It was Christmas Day it was released, yep.
Yeah, I have that memory. Yeah, and I got to say, I mean, you know that Andrea Romano is like the best in terms of directing.
She is. I'm hoping to have her on the show at some point, but I've had just about everyone that has ever worked with her ever, and they all and go sure, on about...
I'm sure they say that, yeah. Her focus and her energy, she keeps it moving. She knows how to listen to the creators. And then she knows how to translate that into what she tells the actors. Because sometimes, you know, I'm sure you've been in recording studios where, like, they're in the booth and you're on the mics outside of the booth and you're separated by this glass wall. And sometimes they slip and they keep the microphone open so you can hear what the creators are saying, you know?
Oh, wow.
And sometimes you're hearing them say, that's not what I meant, you know?
Have you heard that before? Like you hit something and it's like, oh, I did the wrong thing.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It's just, you know, you were not supposed to hear that. And then she quickly, you know, switches it off and then she says, Dana, maybe try. It's very funny.
Do you recall some specific direction from her? Because there's not really, like Lois Lane, there's like almost 80 years of history behind it. But I mean, there's a new character, or at least an amalgam of some other ones, but there's really no history to go off of here. Do you remember kind of getting any direction for this, or how did that work?
Well, I did have to audition for Lois Lane, which came shortly after Mask of the Phantasm.
Right.
And I mean, that was the bigger thrill for me because I grew up reading Lois Lane comics when she had her own comic. You know, I went to church every Sunday and got my allowance. And then after church, we would go to the drugstore and I would get my comics. You know, I'm talking about when they were 10 cents.
You bought them off the stands. Like you bought the original ones.
Yes. And
did you buy the Superman's Girlfriend Lois Lane comic?
Yes. Like I started with Superman. Uh-huh. And then I believe it was the 70s. No, what would it be? Maybe late 60s.
Probably
late 60s. Yeah. And that's when the comics started going to 25 cents, which was robbery. And you know, to me, Lois Lane was my role model because she was a career girl and I wanted to be a career girl. And, you know, she was a feminist and way ahead of her time. So, and also I grew up watching the TV series Superman, you know, with George Reeves.
Yeah, I saw this too. Like, yeah, because you had two Lois Lanes in that one as
yes.
you go through, and you actually get to meet Noelle Neal at one point.
Yes, Noelle Neal, who was just lovely. And
how amazing
just
was she?
Her.
Yeah,
oh, God, great, just great, and she loved being Lois.
She did. We saw her a couple times in Metropolis, Illinois, for the Superman Festival, and she always had the Superman shirt on, and she, you know, the red, red, yellow, blue. I mean, she loved
yeah.
I think I have a statue of her there too now.
Yeah, I love that.
Cool.
I love that. She was a great lady. Yeah. So for me to audition for that was a bigger thrill, you know, just to get to audition. And when I read the script and Bruce and Paul and Alan, I said to them, this reads like, you know, Rosalind Russell and His Girl Friday. And they said, yeah, that's what we want. We're doing kind of that kind of throwback thing. I said, oh, okay, perfect. I know how to do that. So I just talked really fast, you know.
Yeah.
And it worked.
That's before I forget. I before we get into Lois, I did want to add. Did you get any specific direction for Andrea? From Andrea?
Well, you know, a lot of Lois is screaming and falling.
Yes, she's in peril often.
A lot. So it was more making sure the thuds were heard when she fell. And
for Lois you're talking about.
Yeah, for Lois. And I remember when I first started doing it, I think a lot of the fanboys were bothered that Lois could be on the mean side. And I have to say, to Andrea's credit, she never made me soften her, which I liked, you know, that she was just sassy, you know. And Andrea completely supported that.
That was one thing before, still talking about Batman Mask of the Phantasm, I wanted to ask you about too. I know when your action figure for your character came out for Andrea Beaumont, or mm-hmm. for the Phantasm. Were you aware of the controversy of the action figure at the time?
No, tell me.
Oh, okay. I don't know if anybody ever like sent you one or something. Oh, because I mean, the spoiler in the film obviously is that you're the villain.
Oh, they put them together, didn't they?
There's the mask came off, but they had the mask off in the box with the action figure. So like everybody knew it was. Yeah, I didn't know if somebody had said. I know that was a crazy thing at the time.
You know, I think I did get one. I think it was in my contract that I got one.
Okay. But you just kind of like threw it in a corner or something.
No, I keep those. I have a whole collection of Barbie dolls because when I was on China Beach, fans used to send me military Barbie dolls. So I keep all of those in a very safe container. Okay. And I think I put that in there with them.
I didn't know if you knew the controversy over it or not.
I did not.
They totally spoiled the film before it even came out. So
but
like,
you know, that makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy too. So, and that was around the time that movie, Mask of the Phantasm. That was around the same time that Lois and Clark had premiered on ABC. I'm just curious because I know at the time I remember like Warner Brothers Studio Store catalogs, and you're like in there modeling like Bugs Bunny jackets and things like that. So I know like you're in the Warner Brothers world. Was there ever any talk of you being live action Lois Lane?
No. What year was that?
I mean, we're looking at 93.
Yeah, I don't think I was there. Nobody ever asked, so don't get me wrong. But
okay.
I don't think I was ready to go back to a series at that point.
Okay, so even if live action Lois were offered to you at that time, you may have turned it down.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's funny because a friend of mine wrote on that show. That would have been funny, actually.
Did you ever discuss Lois Lane with Terry Hatcher on the set of Desperate Housewives?
I think that. Some of the crew was like, oh, you know, we've got two Loises here. So, so we did discuss that. Yeah.
But that was it, but nothing. Okay. Yeah. I was just, okay. So you mentioned about Lois being a hero to you as a kid, you're getting the comic books. Mm-hmm. What was it about those stories? What were you seeing? And were you able to bring any of that? Was it just more the passion kind of bringing into it? Or were you able to take anything from your memories of comic book Lois and into your performances?
I think it was all there in the writing, you know, it was all there. Mostly it was just the snappiness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard that actresses get this terrible thing that happens to them, less so now, but back when I was at that age, it was all about having to be nice, you know, God forbid we should scare men. And I was, because I grew up reading Lois, and she didn't worry about that. You know, I didn't feel the pressure to do that.
Okay.
So I think if anything, it helped me having grown up reading those comic books that I knew who Lois was. There was no question in my mind who Lois was.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was interested, because there's been so many different versions of her over the years. I mean, sometimes she just like, you know, fawning all over Superman and just falling all over the place. And sometimes she's like really, I mean, you think about Margot Kidder in the Superman films, like really hard edge to Clark. I mean, almost completely dismissive. And I guess there was sort of a middle ground with your Lois, right?
Yeah, I love the fact, I mean, we all know the great conceit is that she doesn't know who Clark is until, of course, she finds out during our series, she finds out. But she was always a professional, and that's where she was tough. She was really tough about her work, and that's when she's hard on Clark. But with Superman, she's just smitten. You know, and I think it feeds into the whole female thing of being, you know, in love with the guy that you can't have. that works too.
You're pretty close working relationship with Superman himself, Tim Daly. How often did you guys get to record together? I know you're doing like a radio play, but then I know schedules also come into play too. So are you recording every episode together, or just when you guys can get together?
In the beginning, we were recording every episode together, which was a dream because it was like doing old radio. It was so much fun to go to the studio and have as many people there as you could. And oftentimes, you know, it was incredible co-stars, amazing. You know, I got to meet Malcolm McDowell sitting next to him, you know, in the recording booth. That was, and, you know, Margaret Cho and people like that. That was great.
Who was the one that came in that made you sort of fangirl out? Like, because you're talking about like you love, because I know Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was there.
Yes, he was another one.
Was he the one that you were like, okay, I get to work with?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching him, you know, on television, on FBI, right? He was on the FBI show.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I knew him from, the FBI. So, and 77 Sunset Strip, but that was a little earlier. Yeah.
Was there somebody that came in? Because I know they got people like Paul Williams would come in and do Penguin, you know, or on Batman.
Yeah.
You know, and Superman was the same way. You would have all these guests come. Was there somebody that you went into the studio one day and you're like, whoa, didn't realize I'd be working with you today?
You know who? I had no idea she was going to be there, and it was a thrill. Was Olivia Hussey, who was in the Zeffirelli movie of Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
And you know, when I was a girl, that was the big romantic movie, and I never thought that she would be doing Superman. <you know? laughs> I don't even remember who she played, but there she was, and she was the nicest lady, and still beautiful.
Did you get to see anything? I mean, obviously they showed you some sketches, I'm sure, of Lois and some pictures of Lois for the animated version. But did you get to see any like storyboards or like how episodes were plotted out at all?
No, I only saw it when we would come back in and have to do like pickups, you know.
Okay, so looping and things like that.
Looping, things like that. That was the only time I saw it. Of course, I love the way she looked. I wish I looked like that. My God. With those violet eyes, she was gorgeous.
Well, that's why I was wondering, because I always thought that you were going to be in contention for like live action Lois back in the day. That's why I kind of asked that too.
Well, I wish I was asked to be in one of the Superman movies. That would have been fantastic.
That would have been cool. You referred to this because we mentioned Lois is always at the center of action. You're falling or something. So kind of walk us through some of those, because obviously the dialogue, straight up dialogue, that's fair. I would imagine that's fairly straightforward, but trying to convey somebody falling from a helicopter or from, you know, while you're standing behind a microphone. Did you do anything specifically? Did you do anything physical? Did you? Because I know Hamill gets up and he just like.
Oh, yes, yes. He's so enjoyable to watch. It's like watching a conductor. because he stands the whole time. Yeah. I tended to sit on a stool just because I'm lazy. And the screams, I have to say, I'm a naturally good screamer. So that was not hard. It was more about saving your voice. And you just have to basically not be afraid of making a fool of yourself. That's the key. You have to be, like I said, the reason I became an actor was it's play. You know, you continue to get to be a kid. And I live right next to a school in LA, and I've heard girls scream constantly. And I think girls grow up screaming, so it's a very natural thing. And the hardest thing is to just do it with abandon. And Tim Daly and I were always joking that, you know, half of his stuff, he sounded like he was taking a shit, basically. he was going,
so, yeah, well, that part is in your family history. I mean,
yes,
you do have some knowledge about that, right?
I'm always up for
wasn't
a
your
joke.
Yeah, wasn't your grandfather invented like some...
Yeah, my great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather, yeah. Flange doohickey thing. Okay, well, I guess if there's anybody in authority on that subject.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about Tim Daly, working with him. George Newbern.
Yes.
You get to come in and work with George, that because I guess Tim wasn't available at some point.
Yeah, he had moved to Rhode Island.
Okay,
yes.
So some of those things. So what are the differences you see between Tim Daly and George Newbern, your two Supermen?
Let's see. Yeah, they are different. Tim has, as I remember, was a little bit... Tim has this great quality, and he looks like Superman too, which was ironic that both he and I kind of looked like the characters. He has this very all-American, straightforward, you know, deadpan thing that he does, but underneath it all there's a real wryness going on because it's so deadpan. Whereas I think George's delivery and George has changed, like evolved over time, but I think he was less deadpan maybe, and a little bit, he could get a little sillier, I think.
Oh, with his Superman, it was a little lighter.
Yeah. A little later, but I, you know, he's still doing it, correct? He's doing Justice League.
He is, yeah, and that's what I was wondering. I mean, do you, because I know you've revisited the character too, that even the Batman Superman story, I know you came back for, was it Flashpoint Paradox movie. So do you, I know he gets the call a lot, do you get the Lois call when you're available, or is it just, how does that work?
I have no clue, honestly. I think Andrea is very nice, and she tries to get me in. You'd have to ask the guys why they keep changing Lois up, because there's been several of them over the years.
Yeah. I mean, I think, but you've got most of them, I think, right?
Yeah, you
have, like, the record?
I was the longest running for a while, but I honestly think it's because, you know, there's a new girl in town. And the great thing is, if you're a guy who's, you know, a comic book nerd and, you know, you don't get out a lot, it's a great way to meet the new girl. You know, that's how I get the first job. So, you know, you've had Christina Hendricks, you've had Stana Katic, you've had, you know, a lot of different great Loises over the year, and I get it. But I would love to come back anytime they want me.
It's, well, you've even done the video games, though, too. Well, you did one video game, I think. The Shadow of Apocalypse. Is that, because I've talked to different voice actors, and they do talk about the tedious nature of those projects.
Yeah.
What was your schedule like compared to your animated work as compared to your video game work that you did, that you got to do?
Well, a lot of it's because of Andrea. Andrea is so fast that she keeps the energy going, and you're not in there very long. But if you are working with other people, they tend to take longer and more corrections. And I haven't done that in a while, so I can't really recall how long that took. But it's fun. It's really fun. It's all fun.
Would you, because they're always bringing back, I mean, everything's a superhero project now. I mean, there's the Marvel movies, the Marvel TV shows, DC's, you know, got so many TV shows on now and movies coming out.
Yeah.
Do you watch any of those things? Are you interested in any of those things? Would you want to be a part of any of those things?
I mean, I know how popular they are, so that's great. And I did like, I haven't seen all of the Marvel stuff, but I've seen some of the movies. I thought the one that Joss Whedon did was great. Was it Avengers?
Avengers.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of the
stuff. He's got Batgirl coming up.
Right. I mean, I love Joss. And I've seen some of the TV show, because I'm friends with Clark. Yeah, I think it'd be fun. I do like doing those things. As long as I can continue to do other stuff, I think it's really fun.
I mean, because you talk about, you know, empowered female characters. I mean, they've got Supergirl on now, and there's all these different things. And I know they're bringing back so many. I mean, even Terry Hatcher's, you know, your Desperate Housewives caster, she's showing up as a villain. So, I mean, do you guys talk about anything like that? Or like, hey, you know, get me an episode of this. I would love to sink my teeth into a villain role.
If there was something really fun and kind of ironic for me to do, I think that would be great.
Why do you think it is that the character of Lois Lane has been so beloved for, I mean, we're coming up on almost 80 years now.
I know, it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
And then you're a huge part of that history, so you get to be part of that beloved nature as well. But
I am honored to have anything to do with Lois. She's part of the OOV now, or the canon, I guess you would call it now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Superman is so American, and you need to have the human there and the female there. And I love that character has survived women, you know, the ups and downs of women and their role in society, and yet that character endures. So that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, it's such a great legacy, and like I said, you're a part of it too. We hope there's more Lois coming up for you, but we mentioned the projects you've got literally right before Aaron. We mentioned that one. And you're still doing theater too, right? You're still...
I am.
Boards?
Finished a play at ART in Cambridge. I did Night of the Iguana, which was a blast with James Earl Jones and Elizabeth Ashley.
Oh, wow. Again, what a cast.
I know. That was cool.
Is that intimidating? I mean, you've been doing this for a while, but is that when you hit the stage with James Earl Jones?
Oh, yeah. You think? Yeah.
No, I'm serious, because like, you've done this a lot. So, and you've, you know, you're kind of legendary too with all the, everything. But I mean, what do you do when you hit the stage? How do you turn that part of your brain off and go, okay, we're just equal right here?
Well, I never feel equal to James Earl Jones. You know, it was one of those, I'm one of those people that luck out. Somebody had dropped out of the cast, so I stepped in a week late. So I didn't have time to think about it. And there was James Earl Jones, Elizabeth Ashley, and Amanda Plummer, they've all three done so much Tennessee Williams before. And they could not have been nicer, and were so gracious and so happy to have me there that I just had a ball.
Had you been doing theater leading up to that, or was that your first time back in a while?
I told my agents I wanted to get back and do a play because Because plays are really challenging, and this was a great challenge. And, you know, I'd been doing series for a while, and I always feel the need to shake things up. So that did it for me.
So that was your first time back in a while.
I did another play that Bo Willimon wrote called Parisian Woman down at South Coast Plaza, okay. South Coast Theater.
So you got your stage legs back a little bit.
Yeah. So, it had been 4 years since I'd done a play.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, again, like you said, you didn't have much time to think about, so it probably helped the whole aspect of it too. Do you prefer, I mean, cause I know the series work can be grinding. Do you prefer one over the other, stage, feature films, TV?
I really like it all. Like I said, my lesson learned in China Beach was writing. It's all about the writing. So at this point in my life, I can afford to be picky about the writing, and I try to be.
Just looking for the characters, the right characters.
Yeah.
How can fans find out more about you? Social media, where are you at?
Mostly, I'm just on Twitter for now.
Okay. You're out there tweeting? Are you pretty regular, or do you...
I am spotty. Probably more than I should be, actually. you know, Twitter's changed a lot, as I'm sure you've noticed, since it started.
A little bit, yeah.
Certainly since our last election. I wish it was as much fun as it used to be. But, you know, what I loved about it in the beginning was I met people that I would never meet. You know, I became friends with people that I wouldn't normally meet. And so that was great. And I met a lot of, you know, people who were into animation through it. So that's been fantastic.
Are you thinking about like upcoming, like comic book conventions? Do you do any of these? Are you interested in doing any of those to meet fans,
you know,
of Lois Lane? And
I've never been asked. Nobody's ever asked
me. I cannot believe that.
Nope. Nobody has ever.
Well, my
asked
buddy me. Runs one up in Connecticut. So if you ever, right. if you're ever going home sometime, you can hang
you
out at Terrificon. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, that those Comic Cons have changed so much too, because when I was on Hand of God the first season, we were at Comic Con and I couldn't go because I was in Europe at that point. But I mean, I'd love to do one just to see what everybody's talking about.
There you go. Well, I mean, you are available for that.
Yeah. I mean, I know so many of my friends do them. Jerry Ryan does them all the time, and Bob Picardo, Ron Perlman does them.
Nathan Fillion's out there all the time. Yeah. You got a chance to work with him too. So he's out there doing them all the time. So,
yeah.
Well, maybe
yeah.
you and Nathan could show up and just do a little castle reunion too.
Yeah. And you know what? I was just thinking, because we were talking about Superman, I was friends with Chris Reeve. I knew him, and I think he created such an iconic Superman, you know? And after he had his injury and his accident, he used to talk about, because I knew him when he was not long after out of Juilliard, mm-hmm. When he was roommates with Robin Williams. Yeah. And later when he got sick, he talked about how much, you know, you've probably heard this, but being Superman served him and being sick, and that he felt, and you know, being injured, and he felt like that role taught him, you know, about decency and helping other people. And he really felt like once he had his injury that he had this calling, and he credited a lot of that with Superman, playing Superman.
He became Superman.
I mean, he really did.
I mean, you're hitting me my sweet spot, because he's my Superman. You know, that was the movie that changed everything for me when I saw him. I still believe he flew. No one's going to tell me that he did not actually fly on screen.
Yeah. You know, and
he was amazing.
It's funny, because that role was just in him. You know, that was just meant to be.
Did you, I mean, so when you watch those movies, are you remembering Margot Kidder when you're doing your Lois too?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, of course, I grew up watching her in those movies.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't that young, but when those came out, yeah. But like I said, I think my image was more Rosalind Russell. Mm-hmm. That's who I always had in my head. Was Rosalind.
Just that quick fire, and I think they kind of translated that into Lois and Clark a little bit with that rapid fire dialogue too. So that seems to be more the kind of Lois where they're headed, is that rapid fire. Although I think they got away from that in the new movies.
Yeah, a little bit with the Amy Adams one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think, you know, the character in His Girl Friday, mm-hmm. you know, being she was a journalist, and because Bruce Timm had created it visually as more of a retro kind of thing, it just worked.
Yeah, you kind of saw that 40s vibe coming through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing. And, well, like I said, you're part of that legacy too, so... look, we're looking forward to these projects that you talked about. We're going to follow you on social media. Did you give your handle on Twitter?
It's just Dana Delaney.
Dana Delaney.
Spelled N-Y, not N-E-Y.
We will follow you all the way over. We're going to check out these projects. We hope, again, there's more Lois in the future. Hopefully you can look at that. Maybe see you at a convention. That'd be very cool.
Thank you. I just wanted to say one thing that astonished me recently, just because I was spelling my name out. You know, I spell my last name D-E-L-A-N-Y. I've had this name my whole life. And someone said to me recently, oh, Dana of L.A., New York. And I went, what? Yeah, Dana D. L.A., New York. And I went, oh, my God, you're right.
So we're finally figuring out how to spell your name after all these years, right?
Yes. I was like an anagram. I didn't even know it.
They spelled it correctly on the Emmys, though, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
That's what counts. That's what counts. And as long as it's all correct on the paychecks, that's all you need, right?
That's right.
I tell you what, we're going to follow you all over the place. We're going to know how you spell your name. We're going to follow you on Twitter. And I thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I don't know about you, but I simply cannot believe that no one has asked Dana Delaney to appear at a comic book convention. My goodness, that seems like a no-brainer, right? A multiple Emmy award-winning actress who brought Lois Lane to life? Man, it doesn't get any better than that. Look, as Lex Luthor said in Superman the movie, what more can anyone ask? Hey, look, she's from Connecticut. I'm going to be going to Terrificon. That's in Connecticut in a few weeks. This seems like a match made in comic book heaven. It's not going to happen this year, but look, maybe one of these Terrificons I'll get to moderate a Q&A with her. That would be very cool. Who knows what the future holds. But what I do know is that Dana is, as I mentioned earlier, one of my all-time favorite actresses. I am so honored that she stopped by the Lair to chat today. I know each and every one of you out there feels the same way about her. She has done some amazing things. It's always fun to watch her. Big thanks to Dana for stopping by today. I'm going to put a link to her Twitter feed. She is quite active. I've noticed that on social media. So you can tweet her. Maybe she'll tweet back. That link's going to be in the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net. So be sure to check it out. Plus, everything I've talked about today, I'm going to put links in there as well. All right, time to hit the Comic Book Central mailbag. This week, I heard from Ernest Edwards, who writes, "Hello, Joe. Hope you're having a fine summer. I was saddened to hear about the recent passing of Joan Lee, wife of Stan Lee. I always remember meeting Stan the Man at a Creation Con in the 80s and seeing a lovely lady seated next to him at the autograph table, which I believe to be her. Although many fans didn't care for its initial season, I've always held a soft spot for the Marvel Action Hour, where Mrs. Lee voiced the landlady of the Fantastic Four's Baxter Building. Any chance of interviews with the other voice actors, like Robert Hayes, who played Iron Man, Bo Weaver, who was Reed Richards, as well as Superman, or Chuck McCann, who voiced The Thing, Blizzard, and various characters in Bob Kane's Cool McCool?" Hey, thanks for writing in, Ernest. I am having a fantastic summer. Thank you so much for asking. Got to see a lot of Mystery Science Theater this past week. Hope you're having a fun summer as well. Yeah, I'm telling you what, I think we were all saddened to hear that, of Joan Lee's passing. That was such sad news to see. And she was an inspiration for much of Stan's work, as he said that on numerous occasions. So thanks for mentioning her voiceover work as well. I appreciate that, the things you listed there. As you might recall, she was also the voice of Madame Web on Spider-Man the Animated Series. I'm telling you what, there is a very cool Facebook post by the producer of that series, John Semper Jr. I interviewed him back on episode 128. Back in the day, for the final episode of the Spider-Man animated series, John had Stan Lee record an appearance as himself, Stan Lee cameo, there you go, meeting his creation, Spider-Man, and he included Madame Web in that episode as well. So you can figure out what happened. Joan and Stan got to record in the studio together. John got a picture of it. He posted that picture of them on the Facebook page recently. Here's the Facebook page. It's a long title. Spider-Man the Animated Series, moderated by producer John Semper Jr. Long Facebook page title, but it's out there. Go give it a like. Check that out. Very cool post. The other part of your email, I reached out to a couple of the people that you did mention in that email. I haven't heard back yet. So, yeah, it might be time to revisit some of those requests. I appreciate the suggestion, though. Yeah, I might have to reach back out to them. Hey, if you have a suggestion like Ernest did, or if you want to tell me about your favorite comic book themed shows or movies, whatever's on your mind, drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click that Signal Me tab right there on the website. I'd love to hear from you. And don't forget to follow Comic Book Central on social media, folks. Share the Lair each and every week. My thanks to everyone out there who's getting the word out about the show, to everyone you know on social media. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Don't forget the network. Twitter @comicbookctrl. And be sure to subscribe in iTunes. That way you're not going to miss a moment of the fun we have here each and every week. All right, kids, we had some fun today, but fun time is over for today. I got to bolt, but I will be back before you know it, because next week on Comic Book Central, that's right, we have got movies signed. You know who's going to be stopping by next week. Joel Hodgson, Trace Beaulieu, Frank Conniff. We're talking MST3K Live. We're talking the Mads are back. They might all be coming to a city near you, but I know they are definitely stopping by the Comic Book Central Lair next week. I know you're going to be back as well. Until then, watch out for Ring Around the Collar. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Small load, huh?
Yours too.
Maybe we could wash them together.
Maybe.
It's on me.
So's the ring around the collar.
We'll use my whisk. Tough stains like this need whisk. Whisk does a better job. And when Whisk gets that ring around the collar,
our whole wash is clean. Give you a ring?
Let's stick to collars.
Whisk gets ring around the collar and your whole wash clean.